Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi everyone, I'm Steve Sutherland and this will now be the fourth part of our exclusive series on behalf of Charlton Athletic Community Trust with Keith Peacock. Now, we've covered the 60s and 70s, Keith's career. We also talked about the 80s when Keith spent the majority of the time away. And in the last edition, we talked about the 90s. And of course, we finished there on the last day of the season when we got relegated. So we're going to pick that up in a moment with Keith from that last game of the season time when we got relegated back into the Football League after one season in the Premier League. But as I said before, this is a series that is put together for the Charlton Athletic Community Trust with our great friends at Charlton Live, who have done us proud with this series. We're really pleased with all the help we've had from them. But as you've probably seen, if you're monitoring all the social media and the message boards and the websites, CAPT is working so hard at the moment on the community hub with the Royal Borough of Greenwich. And it's supporting very vulnerable local residents by delivering food parcels and collecting prescriptions, telephoning vulnerable people who might need a little bit of morale boosting. All that is going on as we speak in the Greenwich Community Hub, and it's an awesome program. And that's not on its own. CAPT's other programs are still going ahead, including the Extra Time Hub for our older fans and our older people. So if you consider you've enjoyed these, and I hope you have, and judging by the comments, and we really appreciate your comments, you have, please consider making a donation to CAPT at the end of this. You can do that, and I'll give you the address later on. So let's get cracking again and welcome the man himself back again. Hi, Keith. You okay?
Hi, Steve. Very well, thank you.
Keith, if you remember, we finished the 90s on the last, more or less, the last game of that season, and when we got relegated after 1 year in the Premier League, relegated back to the Football League. But what we hadn't mentioned previous to that, which was probably a good place to start, is a little bit earlier, we signed one of the greats of football. We signed John Barnes, didn't we?
Indeed, we did. And he was just with us for a few months. Wasn't really at the peak of his career, because obviously he was now coming right to the end of it, but he was still a magnificent player. In one particular game at West Ham, when we won 1-0, he was first game for about 3 or 4 months he had played, full game. He was going down with cramp everywhere in his body. He could hardly move, but yet, for the last 25 minutes, he never gave a ball away. No. People kind of kept away from him anyway because he's such a skillful player, but he was hardly moving and he just kept the ball and showed what a talent. It was a pleasure to have him in the Charlton side and in the squad. I think he did a lot around the place.
That's the beauty of a player like that as well. Apart from the fact that they, you know, they're still very, very good footballers, it's what they bring around the club as well, isn't it, Keith?
Yes, I was just going to say that what he did was his influence in the dressing room, and particularly what I remember him for, because now we're relegated. We're going down. The precious Premiership is behind us now.
Yeah.
Even though we went down with our heads held high and the whole crowd clapping on that final day. Now we're in the training ground. It's farewell to some and who are being let go. Young ones being let go. Other ones staying. And Kerbs said a few words. And Barnsley got up at the end and he made a lovely speech saying that it was a real pleasure. He's sorry he couldn't have played more games for the club during that time, but said, what you have here at Charlton is very, very special, and you will be back. They were his final words as he left the club, and he was correct.
He was correct, yeah.
So we've had to move on now, have our summer's rest, and a very important thing we did, we didn't sell many players. We sold Danny Mills for $4 million, I believe it was. So
which was a lot of money for a fullback in those days, wouldn't you have agreed?
It was an awful lot of money, and I think probably the most we had received for anyone at that time. And Millsy did a good job. He's with us for a season, and to get that money for a fullback was exceptional. And we were able to keep, and this was good management and good from the director's point of view, we were managed to keep Richard Rufus, Kinsella, Mendonca. These players stayed with us, and the up-and-coming youngsters that were about at that time. So
I mean, I think we need to say that, really, Keith. An awful lot of people getting relegated after 1 year back into the Football League. An awful lot of boards and CEOs, like Peter and Richard Murray and that, might have insisted on a few sales.
Yes, because the history of the club would always suggest that we would eventually always have to sell someone to keep things going.
But so there must have been a real strong belief at that time to give Alan and yourself and Mervyn every opportunity to get straight back.
Yes, that was the whole idea of selling Mills. We could spend a little bit of money on that. I don't know exactly how much, but we got people like Will Hunty was about. And
Dean Kiely came in, of course, didn't he?
We had Dean Kiely come in to strengthen the side, and Dean did very, very well. Although we had Sasha Illich at the time, Dean was probably, for me, one of the best goalkeepers that we've had ever at Charlton.
I would agree with that. And
without, obviously, Bob Boulder won't be listening to this.
No.
Because he'll still be on his bike somewhere.
Yes.
But he was well up there as well. But I think Dean Kiely, playing in that Premiership for that time, was so influential in the seasons to come.
No, absolutely. And we also, as you say, we had kept our players. So Chris Powell was already in place. Andy Hunt was already in place. And they'd had that year in the Premier League with us. And as I said, we'd only gone down on the last day. So there was no real need to panic and change the team dramatically, was there?
No, we didn't. And being probably typical of what Charlton were building up at the time, it was steady. Kerbs was very methodical in what he liked to do. Didn't like to take too many chances. He wanted to be certain. We had a good all-round group there that had fought so well. So we kept the majority together, and we had a reasonable start. Mendonca scored, I think, in the first home game once again, another hat-trick, if I remember correctly. Although his season was to be interrupted through injuries. But what we did do, and it was very important as we moved right into the season. We were playing Crystal Palace before Christmas sometime. We beat them 2-1. Sulaco, of all people, he didn't play many games for us, ex-Crystal Palace, and he scored what turned out to be the winning goal. We won 2-1. But what happened from that was a crucial time, because what happened from there, we were doing quite well in the league,
yeah,
but we won 12 games on the trot. Now, to do that is just so exceptional. Not undefeated. 12. That's 36 points.
I mean, that really broke the back of an awful lot of our opponents in those days in terms of promotion, vying with us for promotion. That really must have shattered them that we just kept winning.
Yes, that was like being in a 1500 meter race and then breaking the field at the halfway mark, just past the halfway mark, and bring the big gap between us and the others. It was incredible. I remember sitting one evening for an away game. We'd won 10 games on the trot, and things like, should we do this, should we do that? And I did turn around and say, look, to Mervyn and Curbs, we'd have an evening meal before a game. Look, I'm not one to say, have a bottle of wine. Let's have a bottle of wine tonight. Because you will never, ever, as long as you're in this game of football, have 10 wins on the trot. Well, we went on to have 12. And we did have that glass of wine. And we won that the following day. So you have to... We did lose one game in between. But this is sometimes what happens. We lost it, but it was in the FA Cup against Bolton Wanderers.
Yes.
We lost 2-0 away and then beat them a week or so later in the league.
That away game was beaten back to the Valley, that cup game. And we had quite a big crowd at the Valley. But it was surreal in terms of the licence. We couldn't have the sound. So we had to sort of replicate the sound from Burnden Park then, was it? Might have been. To a quiet screen at the Valley, but we had so many fans there watching the FA Cup beam back. But it was quite surreal. But yes, we lost that one. And that was a bit of a surprise, as you say, because we've been on a run.
Yes. No, that was a surprise, but it was good. I was delighted, because to keep winning, you're going to slip up. And we slipped up against a team in our own division. And that broke the sequence, but not really, because in the league we kept going. And of course, then what happened? We played Swindon on the 13th game, which would have made it 13 wins. Swindon were bottom of the league. It was at the Valley. Dean Kiley had not made one mistake, I think, during the season, as we're 2/3 of the way through it now, or even more. And he did make a mistake for the goal, but it was only the one goal from Swindon. Surely we'd still managed to get a draw at least, or even a win, but we could not score, and that was the end of that run. And we went on then.
Well, I'm just on that Swindon one. Of course, I'd spent the previous season actually at Swindon Town, and we went into that home game at Swindon, and Swindon were having, that's the reason why I left, but Swindon were having financial problems, and they couldn't afford to send their youth team to play in the tournament. And Peter said to me, Peter Varney said to me, should we give them the proceeds of the 50-50 draw that day? And I said, well, that would be a nice gesture. So Willie Carson, the director, receives the cheque before the game and then takes the 3 points as well.
Yeah. Well, I didn't realise that was going on at the time. The money was exchanging hands in different ways.
We thought we were being kind to them, and they got the 3 points.
Charlton was so kind, even at moments like that, you see, to help Swindon out. And
yes.
It was 3 points and money as well.
Yeah.
What a club.
But then we got back on track after that, Keith, didn't we?
Yes, you've gone and diverted away there, but I'm still on track for that season, because we couldn't really get too many wins together for a while. We were so near that winning line. It was we kept drawing, we won the odd one, then we lost. Other teams were still going. And in actual fact, we had arranged to have a getaway, hopefully a celebration. Peter Varney, Mervyn, Kerr's, myself, down to Bournemouth. And it didn't quite happen because we had nothing to celebrate. We still needed another win.
Yes.
And we left on this Friday, and the other teams were playing later on. Anyway, long story short on this, we were all actually scouting at a game and seeing opposition play when the results went our way, and we were promoted in that time without actually doing it on a Saturday when we were playing. So that put us back into the Premiership, and after that, I think it was at Blackburn Rovers where we actually celebrated being champions. And
that was a one-all draw, wasn't it? And I think Peter Varney had done one of his operations that day, hadn't he? Do you remember Operation Ewood Park or whatever it was, where we flood Blackburn with coaches and everyone, loads of fans?
That's right,
and a one-all draw with Matthias Svensson, who was with us. Another good player, Keith.
Yes, we were getting lots of good, solid sound players who were working for each other.
Yes.
The good team spirit continued to go through, carrying on the same line as back when, first of all, we returned to the Valley and we were getting sound players, good characters, which was so very important. But we got that promotion.
Yeah.
And of course, now we were back in the Premiership and there had to be a bit of a change. And we spoke about it, and we had done so well the season before, but just went down. And we had to really get the odd player who could perhaps be exceptional and turn a game that would be a draw into a win. At the same time, that type of player, usually what comes with that sort of player, sometimes a goal scorer, sometimes a playmaker, they don't do other things. They let the man go or something like that. Well, yeah. We've got Klaus Jensen and Mark Fish.
Yes.
Now, they weren't probably what Curbs had gone for before. We'd really decided that we must now be a bit braver in our attempts in going forward, because we didn't get enough goals in that first inning. And Klaus came in, and everyone loved him. He was sensational. Now, in all fairness, Klaus never headed the ball. He had no left foot. He didn't pick up people at all.
He spoke highly of you, Keith.
Sorry?
He spoke highly of you.
I haven't finished it yet. Because it's good. This could also be like Bobby Moore. Fantastic at certain things. It's a big thing in football.
Yeah.
You should be absolutely top notch in a particular area which cannot be stopped. But what he did have, and he didn't score lots of goals, but he was a maker of goals. He could cause problems. And the crowd loved him. He was a crowd pleaser. And he could turn the game just when you're thinking,
he was a lucky guy as well. Wasn't
what's
he?
Going to happen in this game? It's 0-0. Okay, we get a point, and he would do something magically, as he did on several occasions. And the crowd loved him, the players loved him. And Mark Fish from the back there would be doing outrageous things. He sometimes may give a goal away, but he would break up attacks when people were through, fast players were through on our goal, and he would make a great tackle from nowhere and then come away with the ball. He was like a swashbuckling centre half.
He was, and of course, had his own unique chant at the Valley as well.
Still to this day.
Well, yes, I mean, the crowd, the Mark Fish chant went out every time he played, but the crowd carried that forward when we had the advert on the big screen for Green Team, and the Fish going across the screen. So to this day, you still hear Fish reverberating around the Valley. But I mean, that all stems from, as you say, such a swashbuckling centre half. That's a great term for him.
Yes, no, it was exciting. Sometimes it was, heart in our mouth, certain areas, set plays maybe, but he was exciting. I had all the time in the world for him. And it was a real character, and he brought something different. And that's what it was, we had something different. So we were playing against teams that would perhaps we would draw against the previous time we were in the Premiership, and now we were getting a few three
pointers
in.
So let's sort of set this up then for that season, our first season back there. We've won the Championship, we've lifted the Football League trophy at a very happy Valley, although we've lost 3-1 to Ipswich, which they've done. We went on to join us actually winning promotion that season in the playoffs. And now, as you say, you're rebuilding. You're rebuilding. You've learnt from 1 year up there. You've learnt from the fact of the players you've had with you in the Championship building. Now you're bringing in players of the quality of Klaus Jensen, Mark Fish, and of course, the striker. We spent a lot of money on a striker at that time as well, didn't we?
We did. Jonathan Johansson.
Jonathan Johansson came in, yeah. And talk to me about how these players were scouted, Keith, because Klaus Jensen, obviously, we're aware of, but Jonathan was playing for Glasgow Rangers, of course.
Yes, he was, and scoring from them, for them. But during this period of time, just before, once we got into the 2000s, the club was growing. Now, you can sense as we're talking about it, it was growing in every possible way. Even though we'd had the knockback of going down, we bounced back.
Yes.
It was though we hadn't been away for long, and we were having good times. The building, more was happening around the whole club, and there we were able to start getting a few more staff in terms of we had, instead of just a chief scout, we had a European scout in Jeff Petir.
Yeah, and as you say, off the field, we were building the valley as well, weren't we? With the North Stand developments and the, you know, the 41 fans who put £25,000 in to help us get back and build the North Stand. Quite incredible, the North Stand investment that went into that. And so growing the club off the field, growing the club on the field, it's quite a team effort all round, really, Keith.
It was. The whole thing you've just mentioned, quite rightly so, because you, as an assistant manager and a manager, you're so involved in winning games and getting the good players in and that.
Yeah.
And it's not that you forget how much was put into the club by so many people who stayed faithful to the club and wanted us to do well. This was it, but it was growing and growing. More people were coming around the club that had supported us and sponsored, made sponsorship money available through those years, and it was getting bigger and bigger. But on the playing side, we're certainly getting players like that, and later on, Sean Bartlett came from Zurich. I went out there to see him in one game.
Well, he came on loan initially, Keith, didn't he?
Yeah, yes, I believe he did.
He came on loan from FC Zurich.
Right, yeah. I think it was a very short time because I think the fee had was agreed, and I'm guessing it was between 1 and 1.5 million. I'd have to check that.
Yeah.
But that was the sort of fee. I went out to see him play. Kerbs was pretty much sure of doing the deal. He asked me to go out there just to see him play in this particular game. I was with Roy Hodgson in the hotel, which was very interesting to sit with him for an hour or so, chatting about football because he was working out there.
Yeah.
And, so I went to see the game. I got there really early, and I'm glad I did because Spartler was playing and he's warming up, and he got 10 crosses coming in from each side in his warm-up where he's heading the ball. He looked magnificent in the air. I'm now, before a ball is kicked, thinking, right, he's good enough for me. And the ball hasn't been kicked.
Was that an area of strength?
Change how things happen.
Was that a strength that you were particularly looking for? A big striker, a striker who could cause trouble in the air?
Yeah, well, we wanted someone. I've always felt that to have three or even four really good headers of the ball is vital at most clubs because set plays, 40% of the goals are scored from set plays.
Yes.
So it is a vital thing. Now you have to do a few other things as well. But as I was saying about him, if I hadn't got there early, I probably wouldn't have seen the best side of him. But he played up front on his own and the ball never really came off the ground. I think they had two set plays which he looked very dangerous at. And nearly scored. Other than that, it was, you know, he just had about 12 touches in the game. But I could recommend him back to Kerbs. As I say, Kerbs had pretty much made up his mind. It was at the final push. I had a meal with Bartlett after the game and with his wife. And it all went through. And he was very, had a terrific career at Charlton. Did very well for us.
No, he certainly did. But as you say, other players who came in that season, our first season back up there, Radostin Kishishev, of course.
Yeah, a great character, a terrific player, so hardworking, very popular with most of the crowd most of the time, and very popular with his own players because he was a good player. He had a very good football mind. He was quite cunning in what he did, but he also he was willing to, at any time, if anyone needs to be marked out of the game, we would choose Kish.
Yeah.
Gerbers would say, right, we're going to put so-and-so out of the game, the top player out of the game, and play 10 against 10. That very seldom happens nowadays. It worked for us on several occasions with Kishishev being that man marker, which is used to do with Bulgaria.
Yeah, I remember he played that role against Ronaldo, of course, didn't he? Young Ronaldo.
He could do it. He'd follow someone right onto into the toilets if necessary. And a lot of players, they like to express themselves at least a bit, but he was very, very disciplined. A great character to have. And we had now, if you're looking at in these next few years, we're having players like this coming into the club. And also, and it mustn't be forgotten, that the Rufus, the Steve Browns, Johnny Robinson, to name but a few, are the backbone there all the time. And you had youngsters coming through, like Scotty Parker, Konchesky, Lisbian, and Fulton coming through. Very important, a lovely blend.
Well, as you say, a lovely blend. So, that first season back there, we finished ninth place, which actually wasn't bad, Keith, is it? First season back up. But just quickly, I want to talk about, just very quickly, but we also signed in that time Iran's most capped player, didn't we? Karim Bagheri.
We did.
And I think he played one game, one half of a game. But, why I mention it is because Peter and I spent a very, very enjoyable afternoon at the Iranian embassy talking about how best to sort of involve the Iranian population of London into coming and watching Charlton play, because we had Karim Bagheri and he never played for us.
He never played. I don't know what sort of crowd we would have added to that. But we didn't get a chance, as you said, to see, because he only played in the one game. He was very elegant and tall, one of the best, if not the best, midfield header of the ball that I'd seen, apart from someone like Tim Cahill, who was at Millwall.
Yeah.
He was a terrific, and he could pass the ball and he could shoot from distance, but he wasn't particularly pacey, and probably that stopped him from having a regular place in the side. But he was absolutely, he never put a foot wrong, he never moaned, he didn't speak much English, and probably I remember him for something else, because as would happen to relieve the boredom sometimes of day-to-day training, I had a table tennis league going, where everyone's names who wanted to play table tennis after lunch would have a game of and play against each other. And he would be watching. This went on for about 6 weeks, and he had never, generally, just sat there smiling and watching the games. And the best player was a fellow called Kevin James. Mervyn Day was good. Brownie was good. I was Lisby. They were all good table tennis players. They had to challenge everyone. And then I said to Karim, he's been sitting there for 6 weeks almost, not saying a word. I said, oh, do you play? He just went, he shrugged his shoulders. Yeah. Yes, I come play. I don't know what accent. Yes, I can play. And he'd been like that, so I thought, I'll take it easy on him. Well, never seen anything like it. It was like playing, against Pele, and you were just a normal footballer. It was superb. I found out later that we mentioned through probably an interpreter at the time, that he had actually played at an international level. And he must have been laughing inside as we were thinking we were terrific players, playing on the table tennis table and working our way up the league. He was a gem that never got recognised, unfortunately, on the field of play. And it's a perfect gentleman.
Great story, though, Keith. So, Keith, that season. It's gone well for us, and some good players are joining us and who will become iconic players later in the Premier League years. But also in 2001-2 season, we, of course, spent a lot of money on a player called Jason Yule.
Yes, who had a slowish start for the first game or so, but he then started scoring goals for us, and for the next few seasons was probably certainly top goal scorer for the first two or three seasons, I think.
Yes.
He was our most expensive signing, and he fitted in well. Could play midfield or up front. Both. I preferred, funnily enough, I would always like him to play in midfield because he could score goals by ghosting in. He had a, he could float in like Martin Peters would back in the 66 days.
Yes.
World Cups.
Yes.
And I thought to have a midfield player like that. But he preferred playing up front, and he did it very well indeed.
And he played very, very well with Jonathan as well, didn't he, Johansson? They were a good double act.
Yes, because Jason would hold the ball up more and Johansson would go in behind. He had the pace and he had a good start to his career with Charlton and became a real firm favourite. And he scored a lot of goals, particularly in the first season or two.
Absolutely. And as I said, there were some exciting games that year as well, Keith, weren't there? We're really establishing ourselves as a Premier League team now.
Yes, as we've said about the whole club sort of build out. Now we go, I forgot what the date was, we go to Arsenal. Now, in all fairness, they have got a team, incredible team.
Well, that was in November, the Arsenal game. And we were playing at, I suppose it was Highbury then, wasn't it, of course?
It was.
Yeah.
It was at Highbury. I mean, just to think of some of the players who were playing then, it was incredible. Ashley Cole, obviously, Lundberg, Vieira, Pires,
yeah.
Henry. Mouth-watering. You want to watch them play, but you don't want to watch them play against you. And, you know, I remember it going so well because Curbs and I were on that, what I'd call the ledge of the director's box. So I'd always sit up in the director's box and watch the games. Curbs would often start the game up there and now and again go down in the second half or, if necessary, he could go down after 5 minutes if he thought things weren't going well. Well, this particular game, we are being absolutely hammered. I mean, we are 1-0 down, and it should be 5, maybe 6. Dean Kiley's made a few saves. Brownie's blocked a few. And then suddenly, just before half-time, we've managed to get 2 goals. Completed, I think, about 10 minutes before half-time, Brownie scored. And then Wright came in with more or less an own goal as he's punched at the ball. We're 2-1 up.
Yeah.
We've been absolutely slaughtered. Curbs, he was furious with a number of things because it was all going wrong for us. And we'd had so many people we were going to take off the pitch. I think we were going to make 7 substitutions. Well, Curbs certainly was, but we calmed things down as we were walking down to the dressing room. I felt just blanket. We've got to come up with something here. We've been smashed, but we played it in a way that they're beginning to tire. They've had European Cup games. They're not the, they're tiring already. It's showing from up there in the stand. Well, we went out in the second half and we just kept going. I mean, it went to 2-1, 3-1, 4-1. And it's just one of the great moments. And then I think Johansson had a chance to make it 5. And he didn't score. And Kearns jumped up and smashed on the ledge in front. He said, "Oh, that's it." He said, "That's the one we needed." And it was so true because
yes.
You think you need to be 3 up against this team with Henry's out there for a start. He can score at any moment. So it became nerve-wracking. It became a bit more nerve-wracking for me because this was, funny enough, Gavin actually came on a sub to solidify.
Well, I was going to say, Gavin, your own son, that joined us on loan, of course, that season.
That's right, and he'd had a few injuries, but this was the actual last game. He sort of came on a sub, and we managed to keep it fairly steady. It was, we won 4-2. It was a game to remember, and I think every Charlton fan that was there that day would have that as one of their iconic.
Wow, and Klaus Jensen's goal was just pure class.
Well, and talking about Klaus earlier there, Klaus could do something like that, and he had no fear of opposition in a way. No. It didn't matter who he was against. He had a smile on his face, which I think put the opposition off. And I thought, what, why is he so happy as he's bringing the ball towards me? He just had that demeanour. And he was excellent that day, as was Johansson. Jason Yule were playing so, so well.
And of course, Keith, after that incredible game at Highbury, we then had our next home game was against West Ham, and that turned into a 4-4 cracker. But why I remember that particularly was it was the last day of filming of the BBC Two Job Swap series, Turning the Tables, when I'd been packed off to Plymouth for the week and the Plymouth CEO had spent the week with you and Peter Varney at Charlton. And the last day of filming was that game. And there's in the edit, the goals were shown and it included that incredible overhead kick from Jonathan Johansson.
Yes, it was an outstanding game, and really to score 4 goals almost immediately after playing Arsenal and scoring 4.
Incredible, yeah.
Incredible. The fans were getting their money's worth, you could say, in this particular time.
Absolutely.
And obviously, it goes without saying, we had a very big crowd there. And if I remember correctly, Kitson scored a hat-trick, and Defoe, I think, scored it. In fact, I think Defoe came on a sub, and originally our player was a youngster.
Yeah, of course.
Before he signed pro with West Ham, he came on, and I think he's hurt us a few times during his career. And it was fantastic. And there was a Johansson goal at the end there that actually got the 4-4 draw.
Incredible, but it was an iconic season in a lot of ways. And, you know, our biggest signing, we had people like Luke Young in the squad who had a great career for Charlton Athletic. But I want to particularly mention one player we brought in, George Costa.
Yes, George Costa. I hate the use of the word. That's not hate the word. You almost have to throw something like a legend about can be thrown about too quickly.
Very easily, yes.
Yeah, very easily. And one always thinks really of legends. They've played maybe 7 or 8 years, or they've done something iconic. Like Mendonca would always be a Charlton legend because what he had to get Wembley, took us up, etc. So, but no one has become at Charlton in all my time. A legend. George Costa became a legend in 3 months.
It was quite rightly, though, Keith, because
he
was just outstanding, wasn't he?
He came in and we played, I think his first game we played at Chelsea, and he just looked at you, he's very powerfully built, no nonsense. Didn't say too much, a little bit of English, but very limited. And in training, he just gave the opposition in the five-a-side or whatever a look, which kind of said enough. And on the field, he played this game, I'm sure it's against Chelsea, away. And he was now our big, hard man at the back that no one messed with, you know, the way Rufus could be as well, but George was experienced and he knew what to do. He knew how to keep the right side of the referee. He would really bump into someone rather heavily. Try and make it look like a bit of an accident and put his hands up behind his back, pull back. He had all the tricks. He's a terrific player and made a big difference to our side.
But that was the calibre of people who were turning up playing for Charlton Athletic. But I want to mention someone here, because you'll talk about him a little bit later, but someone who played a big role in George coming was Jeff Otere, who was our overseas international scout, wasn't he, at that time?
He was, yes, our international scout, and he did a very good job, because he would go anywhere.
Yes, and he can speak all the languages.
Yes,
as well.
He spoke four languages, certainly French, Portuguese, Spanish, a little bit of English, because he comes from Luton. he's Italian, he's Italian descent, and he was so very helpful in every possible way.
He had so many contacts, didn't he? And as a result of that, he knew that George Costa, who'd fallen out at his home club, he knew that to play for international football, he had to play at the first team level. And on that basis, Jeff helped to get him out of Portugal and into our first team.
Yes, you know, that is what his position and his ability to speak different languages made it that much easier. He was very valuable to us during these Premiership years. And as I say, his willingness to go anywhere in the world. And we actually went to, a bit later on, went to South America together.
Yes, we will talk about that. But right, we're moving on now. We finished always around the mid table, but we tended to get a bit of a reputation for falling away at the end of the season.
Yes, a lot of people would say, well, you've just almost given up now, you're safe. 40 points was a magical number. If you get 40 points, you've got 95% chance of staying in the division. And we got it. Each year we seem to get it by the end of February, early March, generally. We had 40 points, which was fantastic. We were never, and this helped, if you think about, you're building a club, think of all what's going on every side around it, the sponsorship, the building for next year.
Well, I was going to say, the sponsorship around that time, Keith, we were doing huge deals with companies, all sports came in. Our season tickets were rising year on year. You know, we ended up with nearly 22,000 season ticket holders.
Yes, exactly.
Which is incredible, isn't it? All that going on.
Mm. No, it was. And why I sort of mentioned this, although you brought it up about in March, we seemed to fade away. And be anywhere from 7th to 14th in the league. But we were safe, and we tapered off. And people would think, we've done enough, we're in the Premiership. But it really wasn't. It was one of those things, I think, generally speaking, maybe we had one or two extra injuries as the season went on. But the players were giving, probably having to give 120% in every game compared with some of those in the division that were probably better players in many ways. We'd love to see it with the Arsenal teams and that.
Yes.
We gave so much early on that we probably tapered off. That's the only way I could explain it, because nothing was different. Different players came. There was always the same thing. We kind of just tapered off at the end. But good positions we were getting in.
Yeah, as you say, very, very good positions. Growing the club on the field and off the field. You know, the Valley was really taking shape. And we're now moving to our third season. And players of the nature of Matt Holland come and join us.
Yes, Matt Holland, and I think Herman Harrison came.
And Herman Harrison, you're right. Yeah, absolutely.
Matthew Holland was the perfect pro. he got on with the game. He could score a goal. In midfield, he's your rounder. He wasn't a brilliant player on the ball. He wasn't like a Klaus, but he could run all day. He was honest. He could score in the air. He could play defensively. He was a dream for a manager. And I remember, and Herman, well, Herman, the crowd loved him in a way that they would have loved Costa, George Costa, for a short time. Because he was truly a devil-may-care centre-back. He could play left-back as well. But obviously we had Paoli there most of the time, and Kaczewski. And Herman would take chances, he'd put his head to anything, anywhere. And he did frighten the opposition. And obviously a player like that, if he didn't make a mistake, he's bound to now and again. Sometimes he'd give a penalty away. But I think it was mainly because the opposition were diving, so he always told me. But one game I remember, we were playing away to Birmingham. And now these games are like Birmingham, middle of the table, probably just, they'd be happy to be there. We'd be happy to be there, really, because to go on into the European places is perhaps beyond us at this stage. We're playing at Birmingham. Herman gets a cut on the eye. Comes at half time, that's just on half time. In comes Herman, and there's blood everywhere. His shirt is covered. He's right. I take him along with the doctor wasn't there that day, and we had a few injuries. I think the physio was with someone else working on him. I took him into the doctor's room, with their physio room. The doctor looked at him and said, "No, I can't sew that up." Herman said, "What?" He said, "I can't sew that up. It's just too big a cut. It would be a terrible mess for me to do it now." He grabbed the doctor's by the wrist and he said, "Sew it up now." I've gone into my Icelandic accent now.
I was going to say, you've moved on from Welsh.
Yeah. I'm getting worse as it goes along. And I'm watching it and thinking, oh, if that was me, I'd think, oh, don't, yeah, just stay in the dressing room.
I might have been inclined to sew it up as well if I'd been told to do that by her.
Yeah, but that was him. He looked, he said, okay. Anyway, he sort of roughly sewed it up. It's a huge gash. He was bandaged up. I mean, we went in and the blood was sort of seeping through the big bandaging. And he looked a bit of a fright as he went back in the dressing room. And Klaus and Scotty Parker were sat there and they looked at him. I thought they were both going to faint. Herman's ready to go. I mean, Kerb said, "Is he okay?" I said, "Well, he's saying yes." Many a player would never have gone out. He went out in the second half. He was heading balls as though he had no problem at all. We won 2-0. Matty Holland scored two very valuable goals for us when we won 2-0. But that was the sort of characters you had around at that time.
And you can see why you got the name Herminator, didn't you?
Absolutely.
Really. But as I say, it was we were building our club on and off the field. We were holding our own in the leagues the previous season. Scott Parker was nominated for PFA Young Player of the Year, although he lost to Jermaine Genus, I seem to remember.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
So we're moving on. We're doing progressing as a club. But in 2003-04, we also brought in a player called Paolo Di Canio.
We certainly did. And that was probably, so we keep moving on. And I've got to say this. So what I noticed about Curves, he was having to be, but he became more ruthless in general, trying to keep these upgrade, trying to keep the basis of the team solid and sound and good characters. And we were still trying to go to the next level. Now, the chance came at the end of the 2003 season, I think it was, and we were at a dinner. I heard through Peter Varney, actually, the first one who told me that he may be available, spoke with Curbs about it, and the obvious things came to mind. Oh, he's pushed over referees. Harry, in the end, had sort of given up on him. I think he sat down during in the middle of one match with his arms flailing, saying, "No one passes to me." So he had some, what you could call, baggage along there. But what a player.
What a player, don't you?
Funnily enough, I'd seen him. I'd gone to see Steve Jones last game of the season. It may have been on a Sunday or whatever. But I saw this game. And like most scouts, you want to get away 10 minutes before the end. You know, sometimes even 15 to beat the traffic. I was at West Ham and I was watching the game, watching Jones who was playing. And Di Canio was out there. I did not want to leave that stadium. And I'd seen thousands and thousands of games, but just to see him on the ball was just magical.
Yes.
And here was a chance now to get him. And, you know, we thought in the end, you know, Curbs went for it. And I thought that was a brave move and the right move. I felt Curbs had nothing to lose because if after 2 or 3 months Paolo hadn't done the stuff and it caused a few problems in any way, then perhaps people would say, well, he had a few troubles elsewhere. And
yeah, I mean, he was loved at West Ham, and rightly so. I mean, he gave great service to them, but he lost his way towards the end, and that was our chance, as you say, to bring him to the Valley.
That's right. And obviously he was, I don't know his exact age, maybe 33-ish.
Yeah.
He came in, Steve. He was immaculate in everything he did. He was out on the training field a half an hour before anyone else.
Yeah.
He was a delight. He was doing everything professionally, encouraging people. He wanted the best. And from a coach's point of view, to go out and have a session with him, and you generally know, even the Tausiansons, you kind of get to know what way he's going to. Chrissy Powell with his brilliant way of wheeling his way out down that left with a dummy and bringing the ball on the inside with his right, left foot. You get to know them. With Di Canio, you did not know what he was going to do. There are times he completely fooled you. And this is inspiring for a coach or a manager to be watching this. He was absolutely tremendous.
Well, he also had an influence around the club as well, a great influence around the club. And he, I mean, as you say, you know, the way he looked after himself, the way he trained, incredible influence, positive influence. And we can't take away, he was also a great influence on the team as well, wasn't he?
He was, because he was scared of no one. He knew how good he was. He never expected to make a mistake. If he did make a mistake, he was down on himself, like top players do get really annoyed with themselves. But he was just outstanding whenever he went on that field of play. One big thing, he'd do things like this, psychologically changed the game. We were playing Arsenal at home. There was as powerful as ever. Sol Campbell is the centre-half. And he said to Scotty and whoever else was in midfield, I'd be marked, Campbell would be behind me, trying to man mark me. He said, just give me the ball. No, I mean, just give it to me. It doesn't matter how well I'm being marked.
Mm-hmm.
And really early on in the game, the ball was knocked into him. I think it was Scotty who knocked it into him. And instead of laying it off, which he should have done because he was being tidy marked, he swiveled and turned on Campbell, slipped the ball through his legs and got it like a played a 1-2 with someone else. One moment. Well, our team were flabbergasted because that's the sort of thing you think Andre may do against you. You know, we had to battle away and now someone's coming and just said, hey, I'm not worried about this. Campbell's just another player. He's not as good as me. And he scored a penalty in that game. We drew 1-1. But his influence by things like that on the pitch that gave other people extra confidence to think we are as good as who we're playing against.
And he scored that penalty against Arsenal, didn't he? That little chip that completely deceived Lehman. Was it a Panenka penalty, wasn't it?
Yes, well, who was the first one? The Czechoslovakian did that. Panenka, something
like that. Yeah,
I'm sure someone listening perhaps will actually come up with the name. Yes, he did. And of course, you had to. He was a great penalty taker and probably one of the coolest I've seen until I met Lyle Taylor.
And I couldn't say
many people are better than Paolo at anything, but Lyle Taylor became a king of penalty taking in this new way of taking them that he had. But Paolo, yes, he influences, had great relationship with the players, and he loves, you know, the industry of the midfield with Parker, Graham Stewart, Kishishev. These players were very, very good.
No, it was excellent, but we actually beat Chelsea that year as well, didn't we? That was the year we beat Chelsea.
With
Canio and Parker and Jensen all unplayable, more or less.
Yes, it was one of those. Like we said about Arsenal away, we won 4-2. To beat Chelsea at home at that time, when they were becoming such a big club, was a tremendous feat. And we were terrific in every department. And it was a great match to win. But unfortunately, it kind of put Scotty Parker in the top bracket of how good he was.
Yes.
Going through. And he was the heart and soul of the team in terms of he was young, he was fresh, he was fearless. And Paolo would love him being there, because what Paolo couldn't do, Scotty could make up for with his determination and willingness to do the job of two men in midfield.
But sadly, Chelsea came in and took him away from us. And you'd have to say, I suppose, Keith, that did take the wind out of our sails in terms of our performances after that.
Yes, you couldn't take a Scotty type, Parker type of player out of a team for it to affect the team. Because I'd say it's like having an extra man in there, because he wouldn't do what was probably the orthodox way of going to his man and then staying with his man there. He would take the chance, and this is what's good about special players. They take a chance, and when perhaps you think, oh no, don't tackle, he would go and tackle, win a ball, completely fool the opposition, and then give a ball quickly to, say, to Canio, to Klaus Jensen, or whoever. He could do that. He could turn a weak position into a very strong position and a winning position. And he was going to be a huge miss, and we couldn't be played. We couldn't just go out and get another Scotty Parker. The club didn't want to sell him. In all fairness, the amazing thing was, here we are, we're building up and building up. As we're saying, you can imagine what's happening around the club in every possible way. And then he gets this chance to go to Chelsea, which is very difficult to turn down. But you know, the directors said no, they wanted him to stay. And to turn down 10 million or so would be unheard of for Charlton.
Absolutely.
But it became a situation where, for Scotty, he had to go because the players get a chance to do something and get into Europe and get into a very big club like that. It was understandable. He gave his heart and soul, I feel, to the club every time he put on the Charlton shirt and went on to, although...
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I did think his career, England-wise, would have he would have got into the England side earlier if he stayed at Charlton. And I did say that to him. I said, from your career point of view, but there were other things he had to think about, and obviously his future. And the way he played, he could get injured any time because he was...
Well, so yes, absolutely. That type of... The way he played, the way he put his whole self into every tackle, you're right. You know, he could have got injured at any time. But, no, it was a big blow. And but we had to move on, as we always have done, from... setbacks, and losing a star player like that was a setback, but we moved on and carried on growing the club off the field and on it. And around that time, Darren Bent joined us, of course.
Yes, Darren Bent came in, and I'd just seen him once or twice. Once was at Crystal Palace, and he's playing wide right. But more of a natural striker, really, but he's playing wide right this day. And another good bit of business from Kerbs, where he got Darren in. And I've forgotten how much we paid for him then. It was a few...
Well, it was a couple of million, I think, but we got him from Ipswich, of course.
Yes, so we got one or two good buys from Ipswich, and Ambrose.
Darren Ambrose, yeah.
Yeah, and they played well together. Ambrose would score goals. Darren, like all good goal scorers, just wanted to, in training, he just wanted to have the shooting sessions. I mean, I'd be with him probably 45 minutes after every session. And the two of them would always be there. Plus other players would come in, but more, they would be forever striking balls at goal. And lived for so much so we actually started an early morning session for the strikers like Darren Bent, Ambrose Leiber, and Johansson. Yeah.
So we're growing the team, establishing the club on and off the field, as we've said, and players. Another celebrated footballer joined us, Danny Murphy.
He did, and probably just backtracking a bit. Just to show how we're going. Because what year are we on now, Steve?
About 2004, 2005.
Right, yeah.
For that sort of season.
Yeah. Well, Danny Murphy was... He was what I'd say the best first-time passer of the ball. So you imagine the ball coming to you at any height and you're going to play someone through to make a goal, say, or a vital pass, without having to control it first. So many, many good players can control it and give that Glenn Hoddle chip, try to. But those who can play it first time and get the pace on the ball so right, he was quite outstanding at that. He'd obviously had a lot of time at Liverpool, and I thought he would do even better than he did. He didn't quite... probably do the all-round thing as a midfield player. He could make goals, score goals. He had a terrific football brain and would be very good for the strikers in terms of making goals.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And it's in that season, that close season, 2004-05, that we went off to China, Keith, didn't we?
Yes. Just before that, I went with Jeff Battier was already there in Buenos Aires. Kerbs mentioned that we really need to get and look at a few players out in South America. And so,
which shows you the ambition of the club at that time as well, doesn't it? Which shows you the ambition of the club as well.
Absolutely. There I am. I'm going first class. Meeting Jeff Attea, who's already out there. We're going to link up with the agents of Tevez and Kurupjian. In fact, I think he's been on the TV today. With the owner of Tevez. But as I arrived there, Jeff was already here, had gone ahead a few days before, and we've been in the company of people who own Boca Juniors, and Tevez deal was taking place. The first night, we had a phone call. Jeff was always the interpreter, and he's come and said, "Oh, Keith, they want us there at such and such restaurant. We picked up at 12:30. That's at night. We're going for the meal at 12:30 at night. Got there, some heavy-looking gentlemen on the door. We were rushed, taken by taxi.
You mean heavy in several senses, don't you, Keith?
Yeah, in every possible way. It's one of those you thought, well, yes, this looks as though no one else will be coming in here other than special people. Well, we had an evening inside. The restaurant was sort of closed just for us, seemingly. And we had the agents, the owners of Boca. And it was a real unusual sort of situation. Terrific. If anyone can get out there and watch some of the football in Argentina, do get a chance to go, because it's a cross between the English game, and I'm going back to the mid-2000s as well, so
yeah.
It's moved more and more general, and a bit of South American coming in. But then it was a passion of what we expect in England, but with the extra bit of Latin thrown in. And the first game I went to see was Jeff, and Jeff said, "Oh, there's this youngster playing. He's only 15. And so I watched him, and the first few touches and movement, and he scored a goal. Name was Aguero, Sergio Aguero. I did write the name down, and we thought at the time he'd probably cost $1 million. It would have been a lot of money for Charlton to spend at that time, but he was only 15. and all sorts of people probably owned.
I mean, Charlton wouldn't have spent, but they wouldn't have spent £1 million on a 15-year-old Argentinian player at that time, would they?
No, it was just beyond, because if we were going to spend $1 million or even $2 million, we needed someone who was going to straight in the side and could, score us at least 15, 16 goals in a season. But it was, I thought, well, on the Murray Paul, obviously his name did go down. Mascherano, I saw playing against River Plate. And it was just so different, the enthusiasm and passion for the game. It's like in England, but probably even more so in some ways. And it was quite an experience, that.
Well, Argentinian players, Tevez and Mascherano, would come to the fore a little bit further on in your career in the 2000 to 2010 era. But, you've come back from Argentina, and now we're off to China, as I said, which was quite groundbreaking for the club at the time. I remember working with Peter on that trip, and the aim of us obviously was to build on our Premier League status and build links with Chinese companies while we're out there. So Peter and I had a lot of business meetings while we're out there with the local Chamber of Commerce equivalents, and we played two matches out in China in intense heat, Keith.
I've never done anything like it. No, it was a fantastic trip. And of course, Premiership clubs now, and especially the top ones, were travelling all over the world. They were going to Florida and Canada and the Far East, obviously. And when this came up, remember Kerbs, the type of character he is as well, improving all the time in the way he was managing players. As we were upgrading, he was moving all the time with the times, and would soon be having a chance maybe to be interviewed by about the England job. So it just shows you everything was bursting up. It was going up. We were exploding, you could say. Now, pre-season, we would go two places. Woodbury Park, which is near Exeter, Nigel Mansell's place. He owns this, where you've got lodges, and it's a quiet area where you could play a bit of golf, train, and you were close to teams like Exeter, Plymouth, Bristol, Torquay, and that was our pre-season.
Yeah.
Boring, because people, other Premiership side, and then we'd go to Ireland, Dublin. Yeah, so those are relatively boring places, you can say, in the big, when people are going off to Thailand and Hong Kong and all this. But this came up. So Kerbs wasn't too happy to begin with the thought of that, because it unsettles your start. It can do. But it was a tremendous experience. The players, once they managed to adjust to the time difference,
yes,
it did take a bit of time for many of them. It was to see what was building up there. I don't know, you may remember the crowds better than I, but there must have been 30,000 plus for that.
I wouldn't want to state a number, but they were big crowds. And Charlton were Premier League. I'll never forget when we had turned up on the second. We played Janli Bao Shenzhen in the first game, and we played Guangzhou Sunray Cave in the second. Strange names, but I'll never forget when we turned up at the second hotel in Guangzhou and the reception that we were given. And it was the testament to the profile and the power of the Premier League brand internationally then, wasn't it?
It was. It was that they were getting more and more, not only into technology, but football was becoming huge. And it really surprised me how big it was. And it's particularly at the set place, was it Guangzhou? I probably pronounced it incorrectly, but it's in the Canton area there after we'd left Shenzhen. And they had a very big crowd there that day. It was a great experience. It was so hot, though, it made it very difficult to judge whether players were fit or not. But from the PR side of things, the experience, it was a fantastic.
No, it was. And it was certainly an incredible trip for me to be on personally. And no, I remember it. But while we were away, a couple of big things happened that I think we should mention was we lost Klaus Jensen. He was transferred to Fulham. And we missed out on a player who I know that you particularly wanted to bring to the club at that time.
Yes, Klaus, he was always going to be a big miss because he was so popular amongst, as I've said, fans and players. But because of the time difference, it was so difficult for Kerbs to be in touch with Richard Murray all the time, and you can't get to a player. And he had done very well, Kerbs himself, for many years when probably with Richard at times, but sometimes just on his own, going one-to-one with the player and talking them into making a big point of getting them to the club. And it was during that period where we couldn't really get hold of things. Klaus went, well, that had to happen, I think, at that time. And but we wanted to replace him with Tim Cahill. And we lost him to Everton. And I think Kerbs always felt, oh, had we not gone on the long trip, we could have probably got to him. better. But that happens, you know, that happened. And Cahill went again, a magnificent head of the ball. I mentioned about Bagheera being one of the best headers. This, as a midfield header of the ball, was unstoppable. He scored some terrific goals and had a fantastic career at Everton, as we know.
So one that got away, but
one that's got away. And you can't get, there's an awful lot that didn't get away and ended up giving the Charlton fans some exciting times.
Absolutely. I mean, a couple of players, sadly, that we said goodbye to that year, according to my memory, Richard Rufus sadly retired at a ridiculously young age, and Chris Powell left us for West Ham.
Yes, Richard, obviously I went back from the first day, I returned at 91, see him as a young apprentice who was always going to be a winner, played in the reserves early, and he would throw anything, his whole body at people to stop them from scoring, and he was the great destroyer. And it was so sad about his injury, and he would have been a top player. And of course, Chris Powell, what an influence he had around the dressing room. An excellent player for someone who wasn't a crunching fullback, and he was quick. But there would be quicker fullbacks in the division, but they couldn't turn as quickly as him. He was so quick on actually turning, and. And he had this one trick, which I've already mentioned, that would fool everyone in training every day. And each time when he's in a tight situation at the Valley or away at Man United, he would pull this dummy and squeeze past the oncoming forward that was trying to close him down. And that would give him extra time to make a good pass. But a terrific man. We were very lucky to have him all those years.
And, of course, he represented England, which was an incredible achievement for Chris. And we were so proud of the fact that we had a Charlton player representing England, and that it was Chris Powell.
It was a very special day for us. Kerbs and I drove up there to Villa and watched Villa Park and watched him play, and it was a proud moment. I'm sure for Kerbs, for having resurrected, in a way, his career. And they're still doing well at Derby before, I think, he came to us. But he went on to another level and became an international. And he's in his 30s. True top character.
So let's carry on our journey, Keith. And we're into 2005. And, of course, 2005 being the club's centenary season. And I had the honour of being the centenary chairman, committee chairman, and we raised the money. The fans contributed all the money to build the Sam Bartram statue, which was our main project of that centenary season.
Yes, and... Yeah, great statue, and so I knew Sam in the beginning of my career, and he was a lovely, lovely man, and obviously I had the pleasure and privilege of actually seeing him play in a couple of games right at the end of his career as a young toddler, or not a bit more than a toddler, and it's great to have had that recognition and have that statue. I didn't realise he was as tall as that, but...
well, 9 foot.
Yeah, about 9'6", which would get him these days, the way the high players are going to. He could be a tricky little winger.
He could be, Keith, yeah. But so it's an interesting time again. Sadly, all sports, our sponsors went bust. They've been great sponsors for us, but they went bust. And it's at this time that... you and I are both ambassadors of Charlton's Community Trust, but I was commercial director, and Jason Morgan, CEO of Charlton's Community Trust, played a huge part in supporting the pitches I was making to replace All Sports as a sponsor, and that turned into the Lanera Spanish sponsorship, which was the biggest ever sponsorship deal in the club's history at that time. So... it's our centenary. We've now got a brand new
sponsor in terms of Lanera, brand new for them into this country as well. And things are carrying on the field. And what do you remember of that season particularly? I mean, Darren Benn was quite prolific at that period.
Yes, if I'm getting my seasons right, and I think I am, that season, between the 2005-06, yes?
Yes.
Darren came in, and we played 5 across the midfield and 1 up front. Darren was up front on his own. And we went to...
And we had Smertin around that time as well, didn't we, Keith?
Smertin had come, a real character. He was only about 9 stone 11.
Yeah, ringing wet.
But he's a great character. Great skills with dribbling the ball. Murphy could play excellent on the ball. You've got and we got a fellow called Jerome Thomas, who became very useful. Where he could carry the ball up. So we had Romadell, who was the fastest team we'd ever seen.
Yeah,
he may not have reached the heights he should have done with that speed. The Premiership fullbacks used to probably stay away from him a bit and. He did score against Crystal Palace. That was a major thing, wasn't it? We had players who could run with the ball, get up the field, dribble out of trouble, and we started the season superbly. I believe we won 4 of the first 5 games, 3 of which were away from home.
Yeah, incredible.
What a start that was. You're almost safe, you could say.
Well, the thing is, at that time, Darren Benn was the most prolific striker, I think. And but I remember that he wasn't taken to the World Cup, and that's when the surprise 17-year-old Theo Walcott got ahead of him in the team selection.
Yes.
It was a bit of a nonsense decision because Darren was the Premier League striker at that time, wasn't he?
Yes, he was red hot as well. He came into the side, started well, carried on scoring goals, and, exceptional player, just lived for scoring. And he was honest. And he was a bit like Lineker in a way that when the ball was laid into him, he wanted to give it to a midfielder, knock it to a wide man and get in the box and turn players on the side. And Lineker would be like that. And that's why Darren did so well scoring goals for us and in that particular time as well.
But as I say, it's our centenary season. It's all going on. We've got the team doing reasonably well again, and as you say, started the season superbly, doing well. Players carried on coming in, doing another great job for us. The women's team won the Women's FA Cup that year, so it's all happening. But of course, that was also the season that started to see the change in management scenario that was going to happen. When did you first get wind, Keith, that Kerbs, looks like it might be his last season?
When I first get wind of that was, we've got Blackburn at home, the penultimate game of the season, and we'd always meet about 11:30 in the morning, 11 o'clock, have a pre-talk and then something to eat, and so it goes. Kerbs asked to see myself and Mervyn, and he said that I'm leaving the club now, and I won't be manager next year, and it came as a total shock. Mervyn was like, his jaw dropped in shock, and he hadn't told. He'd had the talk. He said he'd had a talk with Richard Murray the night before, and it was decided best interest of he had a year of a police contract to go, I believe, but it was decided that he should come away. You know, that was the decision. And but it came as a total shock. I didn't see it coming. Mervyn didn't see it coming. We'd had another
Didn't see it coming, Keith, at all. I mean, I know that year also, Kerbs had been touted for an England job as well, hadn't he?
Yes, he had, and I think quite rightly so.
But you, absolutely.
You know, when you're working with someone, and for so many years, you can take things for granted, and often when you look back and you think, oh, yeah, he's done very well there, and it would have been ideal. It would have been a good decision to have him as the England manager. So that was something that happened, which made him more valuable property, as it were. But also, I think when we had that, what was our best team together in the season before, whatever, with Scotty Parker playing, that we lost him, and we needed to go on and still get better players. And it becomes more and more difficult because the prices for players is going up and up all the time, and to compete with the big guys, that top six is really out of bounds. And yet, because when you keep coming in the middle of the division, people, the fans, and especially the newer fans, thinking, well, come on, we've got to get into the Europe or get to Wembley in a cup, which didn't quite happen. So it was a shock. He got a nice farewell at the home match on that day.
Well, we all gave him a guard of honour, didn't we, on the pitch at that
yes.
time. And that was the home game against Blackburn. And he had one game left. Which was the away game of Man United.
It was, and very fitting that, funnily enough, Kerbs said to me, okay, I've finished now, I've resigned now, I'm leaving the club, really. I to play another game, he didn't feel he should really do that. And at the beginning of the week, he said to me, look, I'd like you to take it, which was very nice of him. You know, I felt he should still be there and to be against Man United. And Ferguson would be someone who has influenced him as well from afar, I'm sure, through the years. And he did change on that and quite rightly took the team out and led the team out. It would have, yeah, it was a special day. We did get beaten, I think, quite.
Yeah, 4-0.
4-0. It's close, though. They got four breakaway goals. We had.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so it was the end of an absolutely fantastic career, one of the best that any managers have had at any club, probably, over the years. But well, you have to take away the top teams that are always going to be winning games all the time. Incredible career and incredible what he did for Charlton.
So this is these are your reminiscences, Keith. So what was Keith Peacock thinking now at this time? Here's Kerbs leaving. You were his assistant manager. It's the end of the season. What were Keith Peacock's thoughts at that time?
Look, Mervyn was brought in by Kerbs. Was automatically leaving at that time, and so as you once that Manchester United game finished, it was just end of that. I was still under contract at the club, and I spoke to Richard Murray, whether it was in the next week or whatever, about managers for the future. And different ones were mentioned. And
did you think you might be offered it, Keith?
No. It was the wrong time for me now. And the club needed a manager that would have been younger than me, I felt at that time, and also that perhaps had significant experience playing in the as manager in the Premiership. That's what I would have thought would be working on those lines. And no, that wasn't what I was looking for at that time, because I actually, in the meeting with Richard, who was terrific, about it, I said, look, we were talking about different things. I said, look, I think I've got to get my sort of situation sorted out. I think I'm best now leaving the club on this. I've got a year of my contract. We can sort something out there, which we did. And I wanted to have a... I've been in the game for all those years then.
Yes.
Without a break. I'd only been about 4 or 5 months not working. Since I was 17, and I was probably 61 then, so it was a fair bit of time in itself, you know, 40 odd years then.
Yes.
So I was ready for that rest, sit back. I've been part of a trio, you could say. Obviously, Curbs, the main man, Mervyn, and myself there, and had a wonderful time, and great time to leave in a way. And that was why I think I'm now going to perhaps. I was hoping, and probably I mentioned it would be nice maybe in a few months or maybe years to come back to Charlton in some other capacity, not necessarily on the play, you know, the coaching side, something else. It was just left like that. Richard, it was done and dusted. He had a clean slate then, the club, to bring in a whole new team, because I think that's what you need in the Premiership to run a team. You need the top two or three people is new and fresh. So that's what happened. I decided to go. It was all settled. But my retirement didn't last too long.
No, it didn't. Lorna, on that
point. Okay, it's recording.
Okay, well, thank you very much indeed, Keith. Now, as I say, that's the 2000 to 2005, six season when Keith leaves the club again, and that's a good place for us to leave it. But just to remind you that if you are enjoying these series of discussions between myself and the legend that is Keith Peacock, please do consider making a donation to CACT. It is a very, very, very important time for CACT at the moment, trying to do their bit as they always have done in the community. So please consider donating to cact.org.uk/donate, and any amount you donate will be very gratefully received. So thank you very much, and we'll see you again at the next one.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.